Ladies and gentlemen, my name is VexX. This is episode number 22 of the Vex on Vex podcast. Joined with this week's co-host, this is Vince from the band Ascension Drive.
22.
22?
22.
Oh, 22. Yes, sir.
My favorite number.
Your hip. Is it really?
I don't know why. I always just like the sound of 22.
You know, when I was a little kid, like, you know, when they would do this episode of Sesame Street, used to watch you with the letter A and all that shit.
Yeah.
The number 6 was my favorite.
Number
I didn't
six.
Understand why. And then you get older and you find out it's like the number of the beast and you're like, oh, failure. I've liked it.
I got that stuck in my head.
All right. We talk a lot when we're off the fucking microphone. And I try not to talk a lot when we're off the microphone because then you kind of lose the thread and you get back on the mic, try to recreate it. Because that's the point. You just don't want to fucking talk when you're not on the mic. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on this?
I have a bit of motor mouth, so I say...
No, we have a good rapport.
Yeah, we do.
So we just start talking shit, and then you're like, oh, we should save it for the fucking show, blah, blah, blah. So, in one of the threads, I was telling you how I used to have a radio program previous to having the Vex on Vex podcast.
Explain that.
And then you were explaining to me that you understood radio a little bit, and there was a family member, et cetera, et cetera. So, go ahead.
I'll explain that. So, I briefly did radio in college. My first semester of college was at Monmouth University.
Did you have your own, like, show?
I co-hosted a show.
How was that?
It was fun. It was a lot of fun. It was so funny. At first, I was really kind of quiet and shy to get on the mic. But then after a few shows, it sounded really great.
I'll tell you.
I had a lot of fun doing it.
The first time I was on a microphone was on a college show. Now, again... I didn't go to college for it. We played a place called the Textile University, I believe is what it's called, or at least it used to be called back then. And we had a huge show we did there, like pretty big for us. You know, we were kids, we were like 18 years old, 19 years old. So I went on there to push the show. And to like promote the performance. And I was on somebody else's radio show. And I liked it. I liked the mic. And I had like a voice. How you doing? Welcome to the radio. Blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? Because I sounded like this when I was like 18. How you doing?
Exactly.
That's woo, you know? But, yeah, so I get it. So you have a little bit of experience.
Yeah, with that. And it's also kind of funny because my aunt and uncle on my dad's side of the family, they actually worked in radio.
Still?
Not still. I lied. I'm sorry. My uncle
is
the head program director in a – I'm blanking on the name of the station.
But it doesn't matter.
A big station in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He's like the head program director. It's like one of the oldest FM radios in like the nation, I want to say.
Interesting.
Let me actually look that up. That's because, you know,
You're a fact checker as you tell us.
KDKA FM.
KDKA FM, live on your network dial. Okay. What city is he in?
Pittsburgh, PA.
In Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Exactly.
Steelers Nation. But, you know, this year it's all about the Eagles. Just saying, Vince. Little JS for you. Before we had the Vex on Vex podcast, before the TV Dads Wrestling podcast, I very briefly maybe had a radio broadcast. It was internet radio.
Mm-hmm.
And they played music. It was like a music show. It existed. It existed before me. So here's what happened. Starscream was putting out a record. We were going to headline the Trocadero Theater. The record's called Some Flaws. It came out, I don't know what year that was, 2013,
I think.
Yeah,
2013.
Oh, how do you know? That's creepy.
I've been listening to a lot of Starscream.
So 2013, the record comes out. We're going to do internet shows, and we're going to promote the Trocadero Theater. So I go on this local booking agent who I might have hooked you up with named Stacey Laurie.
Yeah.
She was a co-host on the show, and this guy, CM, ran the show. And I went in, and I was just talking shit. As we tend to do with each other. I didn't swear, you know, and we just told stories about things that happened to the band. And he was like, oh, you know, you're really good on the mic. Would you like to come back maybe and do it again? I was like, yeah, maybe. I didn't really know the guy. And then I think he came to a show and we connected. He was like, listen, I liked your radio work. Me and my co-host have separated. I do a once a week show. You want to come on Sundays? So I did that for about a year. Like we did that, like, and then we did a little side band together. And then it kind of went south very quickly, very badly. And we separated. But I missed having the platform, if you will, or the forum.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got in, like, listening to podcasts. Like, we discussed Joe Rogan a couple episodes
yeah.
ago. Mark Maron is another big one. I like Mark a lot. And I just started listening to these shows by mistake. Like, I don't know how. Like, you ever go on YouTube and just listen and watch to random things?
It's the internet period. Wikipedia is like that for me, too. Or you got to look up something.
Wikipedia is like
you
that.
Just snowballs.
You're sucked in.
Yeah.
But I started, like, listening to stuff. And it popped up. And I've really listened to Marc Maron and Joe Rogan for maybe 8 months or a year just on YouTube. And then I discovered that if I get the Marc Maron app, I have like his all of his episodes. So I got the app. It was free. And then Joe Rogan, he's just everywhere. So I didn't have to look too far. I didn't look for a Joe Rogan app or anything. I didn't know. And then I just went to my manager, the Starscream band manager, and I was like, hey, I'm going to do a podcast. I've decided. And he's like, oh, I'm starting a podcast network. Because that's what he fucking does. He's always doing something. So he put us on. That was the TV Dads Wrestling, which is awesome. I like it. You didn't hear any of it yet. So
I have not. I want to check that out. That sounds really funny to me.
It's fucking weird, man. But so what happened is we got built up 5,000 viewers a week, or listeners, I should say. And now we got in the Vex on Vex thing. But the whole thing is, the show that I was a part of very briefly for about 6 months to a year is back on a different network and having nothing to do with podcasts. It's still like a radio broadcast thing. And they rehired the host that I had replaced.
Wow.
But I made friends with him. So him and I bumped into each other at a show. And he was like, hey, man. And he was so nice. And he was really nice. And he was a good guy. And he added me to their like online thing. And he's really happy to have his job back. Not that you're getting paid. But they're like their friendship is reunited, those two people. And you know, good for them. And I actually invited the co-host who I replaced to be on this show.
Yeah.
But he's a little hesitant. He's like, oh, I'm very busy, you know, family. And he has a family and shit. But I want him to come on. I think it'd be kind of an interesting talk.
Cool.
Yeah, just to talk, you know what I mean? See what's going on. But I don't know, man. What do you think about the whole podcasting thing?
I think it's a very unique platform for people.
Why?
Because, well, with radio, as you know, and I learned this from my own experiences too. There's certain things you say and you cannot say on radio.
That's true.
Like, this is more uncensored freeform, you can say.
It's whatever. Definitely, because there's no sponsorship either yet.
Whatever the fuck you want.
Whatever the fuck
exactly.
You want.
And now, I was always told, too, you need to be very careful what you say, especially in recorded aspect, because stuff lasts forever. That sucks.
No, it doesn't. It looks great. Yeah, I'm taking pictures of Vince while he's talking, which I don't think he appreciates, but that's how this works.
Yeah, my family would say otherwise. They say I always seem to find a camera every time.
Do you really?
I don't know why.
I'm going to put up some photos of
the camera
talking.
Loves me.
Dude, you look cool in that. You're all talking. There's a computer screen. Yours looks
that.
Cooler
it's
than
a,
mine
that's
looks.
That's the new profile picture.
Is it the new profile picture?
I think so.
We'll take one together, I believe.
Yes.
But, yeah. So this is the Vex on Vex podcast. It's episode number 21. No, I'm sorry, 22. This is 22.
Yeah.
Your favorite number. This is four episodes in a row with Vince.
Yes, it is.
Perhaps we'll make a habit of it. We'll see. We're having fun together.
Yeah, we are.
We went to dinner.
Yes, we did.
We both got steaks, medium rare, as we had discussed, at the Texas Roadhouse. It was glorious.
Mm-hmm.
We were discussing the new Stone Temple Pilots record while we drove there to eat. I let you hear it. You didn't hear it yet. What did you think?
One, the band sounds great.
They do.
As always. And I'm a big SCP fan, and I was hesitant about it.
Okay.
And I hear the guy's voice and how the similarities between him and Scott are just uncanny.
Right? It's amazing. Like
I swear to God, as you close your eyes, it's him.
Until he hits the higher parts of the single, which is called Meadow, you would think it's Scott Weiland. Because I was driving in my car to band practice a few weeks ago, one Sunday. And the song comes on, I'm listening to it, I'm like, this is fucking good STP, goddammit. And then the chorus comes on, I'm like, oh, that's not even Scott. And this is before the record was out, because I didn't have it. And like, so I got into the single, I like the song a lot. Mm-hmm. The record's good, it's STP. It's Stone Temple Pilots. The lyrics are not quite as introspective because Scott was because of his like twisted soul and whatnot, a very good lyricist. But I got to tell you, overall, it's a great STP record.
About to buy it, actually, check in.
Say that again?
I'm going to have to check it out.
Yeah, dude, does anyone your age?
I love the single. Anyone my age what?
Buy records?
Unfortunately, I still do.
Do you? STP's been out for months.
If it's
you don't
bands,
have it.
If it's a bands I really dig, like Alter Bridge.
Of course, Alter Bridge. Of course you buy Alter Bridge records.
Or Alice in Chains even. Like,
did you buy the new Ace? I didn't buy the newest one.
Devil Put Dinosaurs Here, the new single?
No, neither.
The new single is great.
I haven't heard it.
It's.
Have you heard of Giraffe Tongue Orchestra?
That's the super group.
Well,
Duval and
and the guy from
Macedon,
yes.
Right? I've not heard that.
It's really good.
I have to check that out.
We're gonna pause this. Maybe we'll sneak a little bit onto this show,
and
which
hope
we don't.
Duval doesn't hear us.
Bear with us. We're playing a little bit of Giraffe Tongue Orchestra behind us.
That's
sounds
awesome.
Great, right?
Duval sounds amazing.
Duval can really sing.
That's the one thing I wish in this new Alice in Chains. I love his stuff of Alice in Chains. I wish his vocals were more up in the mix.
No, but he's playing Lane. He's not playing Duval.
Yeah.
But, like, this is what he sounds like.
He's He's a great singer.
I got turned on to this by my friend Christian. It was his birthday yesterday, actually. Yeah. And he's taking me to see Wednesday night, the Primus show.
Yeah.
And the guitar player from this band, who's in Mastodon.
Nice.
So it's going to be cool. But it was Christian's birthday. He turned me on to Drive Time Orchestra. I bought the record. I just don't stop listening to it. It's, like, really good.
That sounds amazing.
Yes. Must talk over it, though.
Yeah. That's the whole... Just so in your face, it's like...
Well, there's others, though. I'm trying to think. Which one is the single? Is this the single? That's not the single. That's a good one, though.
Sounds like Love Gun.
Hold on.
Hey.
It's good stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's a good band.
It's a groover.
Dude. The whole record's like that.
That's sick.
Giraffe Tongue Orchestra, for you children listening on the interwebs.
That is sick. I'm feeling that. Oh, yeah.
Wrong Side of the Morning. Is that a great lyric?
Yeah.
Get to me.
Yeah. God, this guy is such a good singer. Jerry knew. Jerry found the right guy. That's all I gotta say.
But Jerry, he's a good guy. He's a good guitar player. You know what I mean? Like,
great musician. Great singer. I remember when I first saw him. It's funny, we were talking about Stone Temple Pilots. I mentioned before that I saw Alice in Chains and Velvet Revolver.
That's correct.
Which is my first time ever seeing Slash, Duff, and the guys live.
The guys. Dave doesn't get a mention.
And Dave. And Matt Sorum.
And Matt Sorum. Matt Sorum's a monster player.
Matt Sorum is a monster player. But Alice in Chains were amazing. And literally, this is before the new, their comeback record was recorded, so... They were doing all facelift or you name it.
And, name it, baby.
And if you literally, if you close your eyes, you could have sworn it was Lane Staley.
Really? It's like that?
It felt like that. Especially Rain When I Die, when he hit the high notes in the chorus in Rain When I Die.
I didn't think it would be that fucking uncanny.
He was great. And he wasn't trying to be Lane Staley. He just had a natural timbre to it.
Okay.
That fit
okay.
What Lane Staley was about. And Velvet Revolver was also amazing. Just to see two of my idols. Cantrell and Slash, and even Scott Weiland was a big influence on me.
So that's the first time you saw Weiland, right?
Yes.
Now the second time you saw Weiland was with STP.
Yes, it was a reunion tour that was WMMR.
Oh, the MMR barbecue.
That year was Everclear, Stain.
I love Everclear.
Everclear's great.
I fucking love Everclear. Like, one of my favorite bands ever.
Everclear's great. We were in the pit for Everclear.
He's a great songwriter. Like, Art Alexakis, is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
He's such a monster writer.
He is.
He is. And his sense of rhythm and his, like, because he's not, like, a great lead guitar player or anything, but those fucking lyrics and those songs, like, to this day, like, all right, I remember when Santa Monica comes out, mm-hmm. right? And then the follow-up record came out, and they had suits on, and they were cleaned up, and it's Everything to Everyone record.
Yeah.
Father of Mine. That record
I like that song.
Is the whole album's fucking spot on, bro.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got me to go back. Like, I didn't buy the Santa Monica record. I didn't care about it when it came out. And then after I got the second record, I went back and bought it. Now they're, like, two of my favorite albums ever. And I bought the records after that. Not so good. Like, it kind of jumped. Not that they're bad, but they just didn't have the fucking rawness and the potency.
Father of Mine, that's... One of the greatest songs I've heard by that band.
I Will Buy You a New Life.
That's a good one.
Which is on the same album, I might add.
Wonderful.
Wonderful. What song is that?
Make everything feel wonderful again.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Na, 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 na. That's a good song.
Yeah. And then, like, I'm just blanking on titles. I apologize. Listening audience, I'm just an old man. And sometimes I just forget these things. Everything to Everyone, is that what the name of the record was?
I think so.
They were, go ahead.
Yeah, no, you first, sorry.
When that record came out, I had just bought the band house. My first house. I was a kid, man. I was like fucking 20 or something. And I just bought our house that the band practiced in. And I would get up for work, and I'd turn MTV on while I'm getting dressed and shit. And that video would come on. I'm like, I don't want to go to work. I just want to watch Everclear on MTV. You know, it was good, man. It was a good record. So you saw them live.
I saw them live. Their Everclear was amazing. Stained was next.
Now, see, I'm not a Stained guy.
I like the guitar player.
Well.
Because I think, one, he's entertaining.
Okay.
Because he plays a baritone guitar.
I didn't know that.
And he's, that's why their guitar sounds just massive and low.
Okay.
But baritones are heavier.
But Aaron Lewis went fucking country on us.
He did. And I'll get into Aaron Lewis in a bit. Like, I've got some thoughts on Aaron Lewis.
Okay.
I like Aaron Lewis, but I'm also like, Aaron Lewis, shut up. Like, just shut the hell up, dude.
Mud Shovel was a good tune. I remember
Mud
that song.
Shovel. But no, but this guy, the guitar player, Mike Mishox is his name.
Okay.
He is throwing his body around like a madman.
Madman.
Like, he is jumping. He is, like, doing that new metal crouch that Korn did all the time. But he's playing a baritone guitar, swinging that. Baritone guitars have to be heavy.
They have to be, you've decided.
They're just the type of wood they made. I don't know what the wood of most baritones are, but I know those things are heavy.
Well, Gibson Les Pauls are pretty heavy.
So the fact that he's throwing his body around like that, like, looks like he's it looks like a really serious workout.
Is he a big guy or is he heavy?
Looks like a smaller guy like me.
Interesting.
Too, and he's jumping around. So they were good. They put on a good live show.
Okay.
I thought, and I don't mind Stained as much as.
No, I'm not saying bad stuff about them. I just.
But then SCP came on, and I was excited. Scott Weiland, I wanted to be a frontman for a while.
Did you really?
Guitar player and frontman. But
that's interesting.
I'm thinking I'm a better guitarist than I am a singer. That's why in my band.
Very animated on stage, though. Like, you, when you were playing with that other band we don't discuss, when it wasn't your band, you were like everywhere, like stealing the spotlight, which wasn't really your job, hired gun.
Yeah,
you're supposed to behave and just do what you're supposed to do.
I feel like I'm a lot better doing that nowadays because now I try to let my guys do their thing. Like,
my guys.
Like, I let Jack have his moment. His moment.
Interesting. Wow.
But
I step off stage during guitar solos.
I've noticed that.
To let them have their moment.
I like that.
Do you like that? I learned it from Axl Rose.
Really?
Yeah. When you go see Axl Rose in modern Guns N' Roses, there's a curtain. And he steps inside the curtain. They do the solo situation. He comes back out. None of that dancing on the side. Hey, I'm dancing. Look, I'm dancing. Fuck that. That's fucking the Sam guitar fucking moment. So I step away.
But now it's like, we've been talking to Chris about having him do leads.
How come?
He's not. Well, because I think that'd be so cool to have a twin guitar dynamic like that.
It's a hard fucking thing to balance, don't you think?
It is, but guys before us have done it. I mean,
oh yeah,
Iron Maiden,
yes,
to Judas Priest.
Priest definitely,
and then you just have. I was like,
because you know you're just as good as Maiden and Priest. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm nowhere as good as that, but I just always liked the twin guitar dynamic, and I think he can do it. Right, because I've heard him solo here and there, and I lay back a little. I'm like, no, dude, like keep playing, like keep doing it. he can play. It's just a matter of if we can find that balance, that just adds so much more to the repertoire.
Sure, but so he is a lead player.
He's primarily rhythm.
Okay,
I'm the lead guitarist
in your band, yeah. But he could be a lead.
He
player.
Could be a lead player if he wants to. He's told me himself he doesn't. He's not really. Doesn't know a lot of lead, like scales and stuff like that, but he could pick it up. He's a great player. He picks up stuff really fast. I think definitely if he wants it. You know?
So wait, this is your thing or is his thing? It doesn't sound like he's going to the band going, hey, I want to do solos.
He doesn't. It's like
we had a rhythm player for years in Starscream, a while, and he had one song he would solo on, and it just wasn't as good as King Sam. But that was his solo song. Like, all right, here's a solo song. Go ahead, and he would play. I don't know.
It's just. I like that. Hang on. How did we get on that tangent? SCP?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, Mitch, I wanted to be a frontman.
Yes.
Briefly. I did, but like I said, I think I'm a better guitarist than I am a singer.
Okay.
And so I focus mainly on playing the guitar. There is one song in my band that I do sing lead vocals on.
Okay.
Only because it's a ballad that we actually very rarely play, mainly because View from the Top, we just think that's a better song.
Okay.
And so I remember when I brought it to the guys, you know, Jack said, you know what? This sounds great with you singing this, really.
Aww.
Because, I mean, I wrote everything on it. And so he said, how about you sing that? I'll do the background vocals.
Yeah.
And he said,
he's
will.
He's much more comfortable than I am. Fuck that. I'm the singer in Starscream.
That's the way I viewed it. But, he sings the second verse every time we played it. So, you know, but at first, you know, I was adamant about him doing it. But then he was like, that sounds really good for you doing
it. Oh, you guys have like a nice con. What's that? Not con. Like a nice relationship. Like give and take.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're old and dirty, and we know our fucking jobs.
But back to.
So it's Scott Weiland. You want to be a frontman and go.
And then, so we're watching SDP, and they open with Big Empty.
Great tune.
And he comes in late on the first verse. Very late.
Okay.
And I'm sitting here going.
But they can make that up.
I'm thinking that. I was like. I'm waiting. I'm like, wait a minute. Did he screw this up?
Okay.
I'm like, okay. Just off for Song of the Night. Off to Mr. Start. Next is Wicked Garden, which one of my favorites.
Okay.
Wicker Garden's a great song.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so. It's like,
really?
It's Encore. It's a good tune. It's not great. Like,
I just like the rhythm and the drive on it. Kind of like a stranglehold. Now when I think, wherever lies. It's my Scott impression. So they're doing this, they're going throughout, and he's just, when he's talking to the audience, he's kind of rambling. His speech is slurred. And so I'm like, what the hell is he talking about? My buddy's like, I don't know. Like, wait, is he on something?
Of course. It's fucking Scott Weiland, brother.
So then Down comes on. They start playing Down, and
great fucking tune,
he
too.
He butchers it. I remember them stopping Down midway through the song.
Okay.
And Robert DeLeo walks up to the mic and says, as you can tell, this is one we haven't really played live before. But I was like, wait, dude, I've seen the set list from the last 10 shows you just did. And you've been playing the song every night.
That's rough, dude.
And we left right after Tripping on a Hole.
So it was that bad?
It was bad. You know, he wasn't hitting the note. He was just not there.
I'm sorry to hear that.
So then I saw him again. It was MMR again. This time it was 3 Days Grace, Alice in Chains, and STP again.
So it's a full year later. STP did two in a row, or is it like 2 years
later? This was like 2 years later.
Okay.
Or so. And Scott was on. He was solid. He was killing it.
Are you sure it was Scott? I feel like you might have seen it by mistake with fucking, what's his name?
It was Bennington? No, yeah. It wasn't. It wasn't with Bennington. I never got to see them with Bennington. It's fun. As we discussed, I like Bennington, as we said.
I do not.
I know. We had that whole discussion.
You're like,
there.
Please shut up, Vax. We know how you feel about Bennington. Not a fan.
Yeah, but we left early only because to beat the traffic out from Philly. Okay. We had to get back to UD.
So was STP the absolute headliner?
They were the headliner, but okay. I was annoyed because I saw the videos from the songs we missed.
Yeah.
Jerry Cantrell came out and played Sex Type Thing with them. And I was like,
should have waited
just
for that.
We could have seen that. Fucking awesome.
A. So that's the great one, you said. Like, they were great that night.
They were. He was on.
I only saw Scott once with STP,
mm-hmm,
and with Velvet Revolver years later. I saw him on the Down tour, because when Down, I'm sorry, when Number 4 comes out, which is the record that Down is on, that was the single, when Number 4 comes out, Scott's incarcerated.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember buying the record, and me and my girlfriend had like STP day. It was like, oh, it came out today, did you get it? Oh, I got it, did you get it? Yeah, I got it. And like, it was fucking awesome. So STP has that record coming out. I remember hating how the vocals were mixed, mm-hmm, on that. You remember that?
Yeah.
Like, they're not right. You know what I mean? But I guess that's what you had to deal with. And it was Brendan O'Brien. He's really good. I don't understand what's happening. But it didn't sound right. So a few months later, Scott's out of jail. It's like, all right, let's go on tour. And we saw him at the Philadelphia Spectrum, which no longer exists. And it was me and Johnny Mack, the drummer from We Are One. And Scott runs off the fucking stage and circles the entire building, wow, in the stands with a couple security guys. And just, it was glorious. Mm. It was great. And I just seen Pearl Jam a little while before. Fuck Pearl Jam. And Eddie Vedder was a drunken fucking slobbering mess. And Scott Weiland, the Junkie, gave me one of the best fucking like Bowie-esque rock and roll shows I've ever seen in my life. So I loved STP.
Yeah.
And then I saw Velvet Revolver in 2003? Four? No, it had to be four because I saw Audioslave in 2003.
Nice.
In a small place in Philly called the Electric Factory.
Mm-hmm.
It's on like 4,000 people, which is pretty awesome. And then we see fucking Velvet Revolver. And like you said, to see Slash on stage with Duff. It was like a big fucking deal. Like, yeah. I had seen your first concert's Nickelback. My first concert's Guns N' Roses, Philadelphia Spectrum.
Oh, lucky.
I was a kid. And fucking Matt Sorum on the drums. So I never saw Adler ever with Guns, ever. And I was kind of hoping on the last tour he would, you know, do more,
yeah,
but he didn't. So I went. I saw Guns. It was like life-changing. They played all of the Illusion record. None of us knew the songs because the record didn't come out for 3 more fucking months.
Mm-hmm.
It was really good, man. It was a great show. Skid Row opened up.
Nice.
But Guns didn't come on until like fucking 11 o'clock.
Was Metallica? Is that tour?
No, that was later. This is the Metallica and the Guns tour was when Use Your Illusion was a huge record.
Yeah.
And neither the Illusion or the Black Album had been released yet. So I was like a freshman when I saw
And that's
that.
When they had that riot in Montreal.
Yes. And I remember watching that on TV and I was just like, oh, this is awful. But like, goddamn, dude, they were so good that night. They were so good in Philly. Like, it was so good. My poor dad had to circle the Spectrum in his car waiting for me. I was like, Dad! He's like, let's go. It was awesome. It was really awesome, actually. Me and my friend Steve went. And Dude, this is a story. We had nosebleed seats because it's Guns N' Roses. Mm-hmm. Steve went and conned the security agent and got us eighth row center.
Wow.
Yeah, right? That's and we're little kids. We're like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Guns N' Roses. Ah, it was so good.
I think I mentioned before, I saw Guns N' Roses 2 years ago on the reunion tour.
So it wasn't 2 years ago. It was last summer.
No, it was 2 years ago. I remember that.
Hold on.
It was 2 years ago.
It was 2 years. Fuck, I'm old. Yeah. So I was there, too. It was Philly, right?
Yeah. And at first, I went. The whole band went. All of us went. My two friends went, too. And,
yeah, our entire band went, too, actually.
And it was, so we're sitting there, and we were like, first few songs are on, we're like, is this really happening? I was like, this can't be happening. It's got to be a dream, because I never thought I'd see Axl with Slash ever on stage. And then when Slash started playing the opening notes to Jungle, and Axl just went up to the mic and went, do you know where the fuck you are?
Everyone sounded great.
Nuts, sorry.
No, I said it sounded great. I'm sorry.
Everyone, we were all like jumping around. We're going insane. I was like, they're back. Like Axl sounded great.
He did. He really did.
Slash, always.
There was a fuck up. I don't know if you heard it. I forget what tune it was. They fucked up. And I like texted Sam, like, you see they fucked up? He's like, yeah, they fucked up.
Which one?
I forget what song it was. But I was impressed. Like, they were really playing it live, and they had a fuck up. I thought it was, because I know those songs backward and forward. You know what I mean? Frank, the drummer's from Jersey, he's really great in that lineup. Now, the band manager for Starscream, Michael Belinsky's friends with the rhythm guitar player in Guns N' Roses.
Richard Fortus?
Yes. Like, Richard Fortus played on one of Mike's songs.
Wow.
He's in a band called Pagan, and they had a release, and Fortus played the solo and everything.
Wow. He's good.
He's really good, dude. He's like Izzy. He's really good.
Yeah, he can play all those complicated Chinese Democracy solos, too.
Well, he's the guy playing them on the record. Like, that's the guy. It was him and not Bucket. Bucket. Yeah, well, no, Bucket's on it.
Bumblefoot's on
Bumblefoot.
It too.
It was the three of them. So.
I met Bumblefoot. That's all.
What was that like?
I met him at G4. This you
want he's to hear a story? He's now he's the fucking guitar player with your boy now. Scott Stapp and him are in a band together.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't call Stapp my boy.
All right. But, so go ahead.
But you want this is funny. This is so funny. So I'm at G4. I had just gotten. At G4, we did a jam like every night with different guys.
Well, actually, tell the listeners what is G4.
G4 was a guitar thing. Joe Satriani does it every year, and it's like for 1 week he and several other guitar players, like,
it's a convention.
Yeah, they had Phil Collin from Def Leppard in the last one. I wasn't. Paul Gilbert,
he just left the Def Leppard tour.
He did.
Found the emergency.
Oh.
And guess who's filling in for him?
Yeah.
Guitar player from Trickster.
Really?
Because a couple years ago when Vivian Campbell had cancer,
mm-hmm.
that guy filled in then.
That's cool.
And he's Phil Collins' boy. And he really said he got the gig because he could sing the parts. Like, he's a good guitar player, but really it's the vocals because you need that when you go out. So he's filling in for Phil Collin right now, as we speak, actually.
But so the year I went, it was Satriani, Vi. That's when I met Steve Vai, and that's when I discussed the last thing about Steve Vai. I humbly disagreed with everything he said.
Yeah, you're wrong. He has no feel.
You're wrong. He's got plenty of feel.
I don't know, man.
And then Eric Johnson was there. Talk about feel.
So you're doing the G4.
Yep.
And
Alex Golden of Testament. So I just got done jamming with Andy Alador, who is Guitar World's top transcriber.
Okay.
So we did a cool jam. It was fun. So I'm going down, about to go to the upstairs bar, but I hear this sick metal coming from the other room. I want to check this out. So I see Alex Golden from Testament, like, shredding away with some dude with a double neck guitar.
I have a double neck guitar. Did you know that?
Really?
It's normally would be in the next room. It's on loan to someone right now.
Yeah.
But I have its 12-string, 6-string SG.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So I go back in. The guy's packing up his guitar. And notice the top neck is fretless. So I went, is that a fretless guitar? He goes, yeah, man. And I was like, can I?
So was it a 12-string fretless?
No, it was 6-string fretless. Okay. And so I go and I'm.
Oh, man. I know whose fucking guitar it is. Keep going.
So I'm playing this thing. I'm like, play this thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I've never.
He's a monster too.
And he goes, "Oh, you don't bend it. You slide it like a slide." And then me, absentmindedly, not thinking, I go, "This reminds me of that Bumblefoot dude that played with Guns N' Roses." I say that out loud, and the guy starts laughing. I'm like, "What, the Bumblefoot dude?" He goes, "Dude, I am Bumblefoot." I look up, and then I recognize him. I said, "Oh my god, I am so sorry." So then I asked him, "What was it like playing with Guns N' Roses?"
What did he say?
He said. Oh, I like playing with Alex Skolnick more.
Why is that such a pause in dramatics and stuff?
Well, I'm phrasing it the way he said it. He was like...
Oh, he paused.
He paused and he was picking his words carefully.
I'm going to tell you something. Bumblefoot's wealthy today
mm-hmm.
because the decade he spent in Guns N' Roses.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know the story there?
I did not.
$100,000 a month for every player in the band, whether you're on tour or not.
Holy shit.
Yeah. $100,000 a month check comes to your house if you're in Guns N' Roses.
That's awesome.
And he did it for 10 years.
That was a long time.
1.2.
He's good. He's a great player, too.
He's a monster player, but he never broke through. He was never famous. He was like us, just fucking banging around forever.
Mm-hmm.
And then he made Army of Anyone.
Yes, which that I've heard
with
that.
Scott fucking Weiland. He was the singer.
Yeah.
And Scott denied it. He's like, yeah, I wasn't in that band. And he's like, dude, there's videos of you playing with it. It's like, yeah, well, no, it wasn't me. Did you know that?
Weiland?
Yeah, he denied it.
Wow. I did not.
Was it Army of Anyone? No, it was the other one.
Army of Anyone was
the STP.
DeLeo's with Robert Patrick from Filter.
Yes. All right, bear with us. Okay, we said that wrong. I do apologize. Army of Anyone was the STP side project with the guy from Filter, mm-hmm. Robert Patrick. Art of Anarchy is the American supergroup, which initially featured Scott Weiland as the vocalist, but currently features Scott Stapp as the vocalist. And that's who Bumblefoot, that's Bumblefoot's band.
Yeah.
So that's what he's really doing now.
Exactly. He's good.
But Sons of Apollo just came through Philly like last week.
Yeah, that's him and Billy Sheehan.
Billy Sheehan, man. He's a monster. Oh, yeah, that guy was fucking...
Bunch of other dudes.
In the Van Halen fucking retread thing, which was David Lee Roth. So Roth builds a band with Vi and Sheehan. Fucking imagine that. Did you know about that?
Yeah.
You do know about that, right?
That's insane.
And they talked about doing a reunion of it at that bowling alley in LA mm-hmm. that has shows sometimes. I forget. It used to be Grassy's, I think. Grassy's. Anyway, you don't.
I've never been to LA, so no.
On the Sunset Strip, Grassy's, is that the name of it? I can't think of the fucking name of it. There was a club right at the end, which then, by when I went to LA the first time, had become the Key Club. But in the 70s, that's where Van Halen was the house band before they were fucking like famous mm-hmm. Van Halen. Then a bunch of bands in the 80s did the same thing. Grassy's, I want to say. And then that guy passes away. It becomes the Key Club. And then most recently, it becomes like a bowling alley. But mm-hmm. that famous stage is still in there, I think.
That's awesome.
And they were going to reunite the David Lee Roth lineup, the solo lineup with Vi.
That would have been sick.
And it just didn't work out for whatever reason. But it was close, man. Like, they were going to do it. And they were talking about, maybe they did do it. They were going to have the singer not be Roth. It was going to be the guy from that fucking weird metal band that tours around the joke band. They were just here on
Steel Panther.
Yes, it was the Steel Panther guy.
Wow.
And then the thing was, if it really got booked and happened, Roth was going to pop in and do his part. It wasn't going to be Steel Panther guy at all. But
wow.
Then it would have been like riots in the street because that's like a huge fucking thing. Yeah. But that's like over 30 years old now.
See Steve Vai and Billy Sheehan together again. That'd be sick.
It almost happened, bud.
Now, so, Billy Sheehan's doing... Was it Winery Dogs with Portnoy and Richie Kotzen?
What are your thoughts on Richie Kotzen?
I love Richie Kotzen, personally.
Now, do you know his fucking Poison story?
I did. He played in for one album, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was a Natural Born something.
Well, I don't know the title of the fucking Poison record, but do you know why he's not in Poison?
Why?
He fucked Ricky Rocket's fucking fiance through the whole tour. And they found out and they kicked him out of the band.
Wow.
And threw his bags over the fence so he'd get the fuck out, Ritzy Kotzen. And I felt bad. He was really young back then. He was a kid.
He's a great player.
Yeah, he's a monster.
He doesn't
player.
Play with Peck anymore. He does everything with his hands.
But the Winery Dogs is no fucking joke. He can sing his balls
sounds
off.
Sounds just
too.
Like Chris Cornell.
Isn't that weird?
It's uncanny.
If you like, and that's the thing. I didn't know he could sing that way. Why was he in Poison? I mean, he needed a job, I guess. It was that time, but God damn, man.
So I remember they were trying to market him as a neoclassical shred guy, like a Jason Becker.
Okay.
Kind of like a Jason Becker thing. And he was really more of a blues kind of guy.
Do you remember Blues Sorrentino?
Who?
Blues, I believe, Sorrentino. I'm going to try and look it up right now while we're talking. He was the guy who replaced Ritzy Kotzen in fucking Poison before they finally got their shit back together with fucking CC DeVille, who you don't like. Did you know any of that?
I did not know that.
And he was like 16 years old at the time, which was 22 years ago. So now he's like literally 35.
Richie Kotzen, but Richie Kotzen, I got nothing but love for. I think he's one of my favorite guys, actually. It's really difficult to learn his stuff, too. I just got to throw that out there. He's a tricky guy to mimic.
Blues Sorrentino. Here he comes. Seems he's still around. Born in 1971, so he's younger than me. He's older than me, which I didn't know. Dogs of War. Yeah, he's the guy. So let me read you a little about Blues. So Blues replaced fucking Kotzen.
Mm-hmm.
He's 46 years old. Is an American rock guitarist, composer, and music producer currently residing in Los Angeles. He was discovered by guitar. I'm sorry, he was discovered by Guitar for Practicing magazine. At the age of 16, which assisted him in releasing instrumental recordings on an independent basis. Saraceno's high profile as a gifted guitar virtuoso musician opened up the doors to an early career as a first call guitar sideman and session player. He is most often recognized with his time playing with Jack Bruce and Ginger Baker of Cream.
Wow.
And was his brief tenure with the hard rock band Poison.
Wow.
Saraceno's early success in the music industry would eventually blossom into a career producing and composing for television and film, which is what he's been doing.
No.
That's why I don't hear about him. But yeah, man. Years active, 89. That's crazy.
Wow, that's insane.
Here, let's scroll down for a minute. In 1994, Saraceno joined the band Poison as lead guitarist as songwriter after Ritzy Kotzen was fired. After a South American tour, which included the famous Hollywood Rock Festival in Brazil, Saraceno recorded the album Crack a Smile with the band. However, Capitol Records decided to shelve the album, releasing the 1996 compilation album Poison's Greatest Hits, 1986 to 1996. Instead, still, the album featured two of the new songs recorded with Saraceno. After some time, Saraceno left the group amicably and was replaced by the band's original guitarist, CeCe DeVille, in 2000. Dun dun dun. Never heard of that guy, huh?
Never heard of him. Ritchie Kotzen's, in my opinion, still the best player they have.
You have no love for CeCe DeVille.
Unfortunately.
He's got skills, man. The motherfucker can play. Isaac Perlman's like a bad mamma jamma, and he taught him, dude. You're like, I don't care. Fuck that guy right in his eye holes. I don't care about his eyes, man. Why are you talking to me about CeCe fucking DeVille? Dude, I'm going to get CeCe DeVille on this podcast. You're going to show up to record.
Like, hey, oh, man, what's up?
And you're not even going to know it's CeCe. We're just going to start talking. I'll be like, so how's Poison? You're like, oh, no, not CeCe DeVille on the show. Oh,
that'll we'll be see. Funny.
But he's not famous anymore. You can get him. Jay actually saw Brett Michaels play like last month at some
really?
Fucking car thing in Delaware. Like, I'm not I'm not a NASCAR person, but she went with her friend and she liked it actually. But there's Brett Michaels' little band playing.
Oh, there you go.
And Brett Michaels' lead guitar player in his solo band looks a lot like Fat Vince Neil, which I thought was kind of amazing. And of course, she Googled the guitar player and his celebrity net worth, which blew my mind a little bit. And that's his celebrity net worth is about $10 million. And I never heard of that guy.
Who is this dude?
He's the fucking guitar player for Brett Michaels' band. So yeah, maybe you since you have beautiful hair and it's flowing, start the hair metal shit and make some monies. You're like, no, I'd rather my integrity, man.
Oh, I don't
integrity.
Have my hair doesn't do that. my hair does this shit. Ready?
Like, yeah, so out, mine. Like, back in the 70s when I had hair, it was an afro. But yeah, I don't have hair anymore.
Yeah.
That's okay. So yeah, did you read the Stone Temple Pilots? I'm sorry. Did you read Scott Weiland's book?
I started after he died.
Did you really?
Well, interesting story. So I was saying a little bit of this in the car. I saw a video after he got kicked out of STP of him and his solo band playing Vaseline at somewhere.
How was it? Was it rough?
It was. Oh, he was off key.
So it was the one where he looks inebriated, right?
Because I saw inebriated. That.
It's in Texas or something?
He's off key.
Okay.
He's not. He doesn't know where he is in the song. He's pitchy, you know. But.
And then he was claiming the whole time, I'm sober, I'm sober, I'm sober. And when he dies in the bus, he had everything.
And I'm sitting there watching this video. And yeah. I posted something on Facebook. I said, you know, this is bad. And I won't pay money to see this dude play ever again. And then he dies later that same year. So I kind of like take back some words. I saw it coming. I think we all kind of did.
I know. I'll tell you. All right. We had a roadie for a while. All right. I'm going to say your name. Trevor Dan, who was the Starscream roadie. He is no longer associated with us. He's still a good friend. I do love him. He came to two shows ago and he hung out. He lives in like a different part of Pennsylvania now. So I'm going way back.
Okay.
Starscream was headlining a place called the Abilene on South Street, I'm going to say in 2004, I think Mother's Day. This is before my first marriage. And Trevor Dan was there, and he looked like he stepped out of 1971. He looked like a hippie. His hair was down to his waist. He had a headband on, leather cowboy boots, a brown leather jacket. He stepped out of 71. It was crazy, and I was like, who the fuck are you, man? Because it was so, you know, surreal looking. Provocative, if you will. So he's like, I love your band, man. You guys are awesome. And then, I don't know, a few months later, he's our fucking roadie. Like, that's just how it happens. You know what I mean? Like, if they really love you, they'll start working for you. And so he had a bad pill problem and drinking problem, and he was just self-medicating and all this good, groovy, crazy stuff. But I used to tell him, you're like Scott Weiland. You do these things you shouldn't do, and you're never going to die. So what's going to happen? There's going to be a nuclear war. We're going to have cockroaches, Cher, Scott Weiland, and Trevor Dan. They're all going to be alive. And now Scott fucking died. And I reached out to that guy immediately. And I'm like, so you clean it up? Because time ran out for Scott. But I'll be honest. I thought he was just going to live. Because I thought he would have died way before when he did. You don't remember this. His first solo record, which I'm going to say roughly is 97, right?
Yeah, it was like 12-bar blues.
12-bar blues. Yeah. 97, I'm going to say. I think that makes about sense. Maybe 98. Maybe 98. So 20 years ago. I bought tickets. I couldn't wait to see him. This is before the internet, really. Nobody had it like available to them. There was no fucking smartphones. I go to South Street, the TLA, where he's going to play, and the show's canceled. And I walk across the street. I'm all bummed out. And the New York Post says, Weiland busted in New York, drugs. And there's a picture of him getting locked up. And I'm like, motherfucker. And that's when I kind of thought he was going to die. And he didn't die. Then he gets Velvet Revolver. Mm-hmm. They clean him up for 5 minutes. Again, he doesn't die. Like, he kept not dying. So when you say it was expected, I got to be honest. To me, it wasn't fucking expected. What are your thoughts?
It was, I was disappointed. I was very disappointed because I figured, because like you said, he got clean for 5 minutes. Yeah. I kept thinking maybe there's a possibility he could get clean again. Like he can, I was kind of hoping he would get his shit together because the dude was so talented. Dude was, like I said, a big influence for me as a performer. Dude was a hell of a performer.
Always. No one could ever take that away.
Hell of a writer, hell of a singer. I listened to those albums like crazy in high school.
No, dude, exactly. Me too. Fucking Core came out when I was a senior. It was the greatest fucking thing ever. I love that record.
I love the Velvet Revolver stuff.
Every audition I went to the summer before I got into what became Starscream,
yeah.
I had that fucking tape in my tape deck. Every day I loved fucking Core. I loved Purple when it came out. Tiny Music, not so much. It was starting to get weird. But yeah, man, STP.
It was just... Like I said, I was disappointed. I was just like, come on, Scott. I'm like, damn it.
You're like, damn it, Scott.
That's all I could think was just, damn it.
I was like, fuck him. Man, if you finish that book, he more or less says in the book the whole thing was about drugs. Like, all those songs that we love so much and all those tours that we worried about and the record releases and all this shit, that he didn't care. He just wanted his next fix. And he was a really good singer and he was a really good writer, so he'd make a record so he can get more drugs. Like, that's really what it comes down to. And it just fucking killed me. All right, we're going to step away from this boring, sad fucking discussion on Scott Weiland. Yeah. I have breaking news. Box office, Solo, A Star Wars Story, struggling to hit $100 million in the U.S.
Oh, no.
And it crashes overseas. So let's see what the rest of it says. The Han Solo origin pick is pacing well behind fellow standalone Star Wars film Rogue One. Disney and Lucasfilms is struggling in its debut at the Memorial Day box office, where it's coming in well behind expectations with an estimated 3-day debut of $83.3 million and projected a 4-day of $101 million. Numbers will be updated Monday morning. That's even worse than forecast earlier in the weekend. What are your thoughts?
I think the timing of that is just rough.
Well,
because
go ahead.
The week before, which I've yet to see this,
okay,
but I'm going to. It debuted the week right after Deadpool 2.
I saw Deadpool 2 the day it came out. Well, you want the fucking synopsis? Not to spoil it, but the synopsis?
Yeah.
It's good. You're going to like it. It's not as good as 1.
Oh, 1 was...
That's the thing.
Hilarious.
It's good, though, and you're going to like it, but I haven't even thought about it twice since I left. Like, I saw the whole thing. I went the day it came out. I was really excited for it. It's good. It's not a bad movie. There's nothing bad. Something happens at the end that's a little annoying that they shouldn't have done. But besides that, it's a good movie.
I'll check that out.
And the Han Solo movie isn't supposed to be the main anyway,
it's not,
right?
It's so tie us over until 9.
$100 million isn't bad for a fucking weekend,
not
though.
Not
like,
bad at all. And if anyone tries to say the franchise is dead, it's like, no.
Well, it can't be dead. There's one more at least. They're making tons of money. Like
they're making millions of this.
Well, you know what we can do? Bear with me. We're going to fill some time. Please talk if you can, my brother.
Okay.
We're going to look up how much it costs to make Solo. Because if it makes $83 million, it was a good fucking weekend, in my opinion.
Yeah. And it's that film, I think part of it is it might have been some of the backlash, unfortunately, from Last Jedi, which I disagree with completely. As we've discussed.
Well, I don't know. Like, people were pissed.
People were pissed. It was so divided, which it's... Last Jedi made a lot of money.
Oh, no, no. It's going to still make a money. I don't... Ooh.
Uh-oh.
Did it cost... It couldn't have cost that. Estimated budget. With an estimated budget of at least $250 million, it is one of the most expensive films ever made.
Solo?
The film had its world premiere in Los Angeles on May 10th. Yeah.
Uh-oh.
So if it cost them $250 to make it, and weekend one they don't even make back the fucking money, that's not a good sign. But then they could probably, before the end of the run in like a month from now, if they're, they can make like, I don't know, $500 million or something. Yeah. $250 to make. It's not that. Insane. You saw it. Do you think there was that much fucking going on that it cost that much money? Oh, I know what it was. They shot it twice.
Yeah, because they... That's yeah, the director.
Was. So they had the first director come in, and then they had a Ron Howard reshoot literally 85% of it. Mm-hmm. Literally. So you're looking at shooting a movie twice.
Yeah. Then again, also, the month before Avengers dropped, and...
Yeah, but I feel like there's a built-in audience with Star Wars at this point, don't you think?
There is.
Like, we went to see it the first fucking day, and we liked it, actually. Yeah. We didn't think it was bad. Like, I don't know. I don't know. There's a fucking – there's, like, a core audience. The Han Solo story is fucking amazing. You want to hear what happened. You want to – I don't know, man.
But
$250 to make, that's a lot of money.
It is. And I think what hurts it, though, like, seriously, was Deadpool.
You think Deadpool fucked it up?
That factors in a lot of things. I mean
– let me see what Deadpool's opening weekend was. But go ahead. Do your thing.
That was big.
Was it big?
That dethroned Infinity War, I think.
No, it didn't. No, it didn't. Infinity War made $1 billion in life. No, I'm sorry. The big one is fucking the other one. Black Panther.
Black Panther made a lot of Infinity War, broke that over Black Panther. Black Panther was good.
You saw it. I didn't see it.
You need to see Black Panther.
No, I don't.
Black Panther was incredible.
Well, tell me why, because I'm looking this up.
Why? It was, one, it was very different. Very different from the other ones. It was very, very respectful of the culture.
Okay, listen to this crazy shit. Box office Deadpool 2 grossing $400 million worldwide. Damn. Deadpool 2 drops 66% against Solo and Avengers, though.
Ooh.
Deadpool 2 plunges 77% as Infinity War just keeps getting bigger.
it's a win for Disney and Marvel regardless. But if I were Warner Brothers right now, I'd be like,
if you don't make, I guess the rule is, box office Deadpool 2 propels to $125 million opening weekend. That's what it was. Yeah. Okay. And so I guess if you don't knock it over $100 million, it's kind of a failure. That's a lot of fucking money.
Yeah, it is. Like I said,
So they made a total of $301 million so far, and we got Han Solo like crashing right around $81 million. But there's a whole day tomorrow. Remember that holiday weekend does matter.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to go see it until tomorrow. I snuck in Friday and I saw it, but I wasn't going to go until Monday because I missed it. I was going to go see it either 10 o'clock on Friday morning, and I wound up going to work, and we couldn't go.
Yeah.
So after work that night at like 6:30, I was like, fuck it, I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was supposed to make a 7 o'clock – or no, I was supposed to, make a 7 o'clock beginning – I am a liar. It was a 6:45 beginning. Mm-hmm. I left my house at 6:30, but then it had the 20 minutes of fucking shit, so I didn't miss anything. I got lawn, and I got fucking something to drink, and some M&Ms, and it was pleasurable. How'd you see it? Where'd you see it at?
I saw it at Delaware in People's Plaza.
I don't know where People's Plaza is. Where is
People's Plaza is right it's right down the name of that.
That's
highway.
It. That's all you got. You're like, it's right down.
It's not Kirkwood. I'm trying to think the name of that.
Well, it doesn't matter.
Pulaski Highway.
Okay.
It's Pulaski Highway you go down. It's right before you get into Maryland.
Okay.
Right before you get into
Maryland. Oh, right. Borderline. Yeah. So the fucking the Waffle House is right around there.
No. It's
yeah.
No, it's right. People's Plaza is right in there. There's Arby's in the area. There's a
it doesn't matter. I have no idea what we're talking about. Yeah, but
it's good. We had the reclining seats. We
that, yeah, did they go up like electronic ones?
Yeah.
Isn't that fucking awesome?
Every theater has those these days.
Well, you have to pay for it. It's extra.
Well, most of the theaters in our area, at least, have all the reclining seats.
No, but the electronic reclining seats?
With the you push the button?
Yeah.
No, all of them have it lately in Delaware.
Well, I see. So I live here in Philly, and I go outside of Philly to a place called Neshaminy Mall.
Mm-hmm.
Neshaminy Mall has a giant theater that features that specifically. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you have to pay a couple extra bucks, and it was worth it. So I snuck in. It wasn't packed. I was shocked. I thought the theater would be packed. It wasn't. There were a lot of people, though. And then we watched it, and I liked the fucking movie. It's not the greatest Star Wars movie of my life or anything, but I enjoyed it, and I definitely liked it. So I don't know. I don't know. But here's the question I'm going to ask you. Why haven't you seen Deadpool 2 yet?
Timing, really.
Explain.
Mainly financially. Like we're.
Well, is it timing or finances? My goodness. I'm just kidding.
Financially, mainly, because
But you were waiting for that first check to come in, right?
I was waiting for it because I hadn't gotten paid.
Yeah, because you're starting a new job. Sure.
I did. I finally got paid this week.
I know.
And so we're actually planning on going to see it tomorrow.
Oh, good. Yeah. It's a holiday. You know what I mean? That's kind of awesome, actually.
Yeah. I wanted to wait for her to... I want to wait for my girlfriend to see it, too, because I know she loves these kind of movies.
Now, is Amazon closed tomorrow?
No, she's... No, it's not, so she's going to be working tomorrow, but she makes that holiday pay.
But do they ever close? Like, is Amazon ever closed?
They only close a few days. Christmas, they're closed. New Year's Day, they're closed.
Jesus Christ.
But, yeah.
Thanksgiving, they're fucking open? I guess for Black Friday, right?
Some days they shut down early.
Really? I never heard of that.
Yeah, but sometimes you're scheduled to work. But for every federal holiday that you have to work, you get paid time and a half holiday pay.
But you said federal holiday.
Or, well, federal holiday slash, you know.
Because there's a lot of them. Like, Martin Luther King Day is a federal holiday at this point, right?
No, it's more like Memorial Day, Labor Day.
Okay, like, yeah, the biggies.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
But they're closed New Year's Day straight up. They don't ship anything?
New Year's Day is closed for the day straight
now,
up.
Now, how do they ship anything on a Sunday when mostly no one ships anything on Sunday? There's no mail on Sunday either.
Well, I wouldn't know how that side of that worked because my building mainly, we didn't do Prime in our building.
So for those listening to the Vex on Vex podcast, episode number 22, my friend Vince here used to work for Amazon.com. Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry. We're not explaining. We're just talking shit.
Blah, yeah. Blah, blah.
So this has been a weird and varied conversation to say the least.
Yeah.
I believe that we had discussed stakes, if you will.
Yes, we did.
We definitely went deep into the Stone Temple Pilots Scott Weiland thing.
Mm-hmm.
When you wanted to be a frontman, who was your biggest motivation to do so, or who influenced you the most?
The guy, for me. I'd argue Scott, but I'd also say it was Cornell.
Now, here's the thing about Cornell. Though the most gifted singer since Freddie Mercury, in my humble opinion, to be in rock and roll, and one of the most prolific writers ever, not the most dynamic stage presence a lot of the time. Now, do you know what I went and saw right before he died? The fucking Temple the Dog live.
Oh, my God.
I went. I got the poster in the next room.
How was that?
Fucking amazing. Now, my wife was very angry with me when I went. She texted me the whole night. She tried to more or less ruin the concert, if I'm completely honest with you. She was mad that I was going. They were like $200 a ticket. It was wintertime. We don't work a lot in the winter, so I shouldn't spend the money. But he died, man. And fucking Temple of the Dog, for me, was a great record. I love that whole album. So I was so glad to see it. And my God, it was so good. That night, he was on fire. I've seen him live many times. The last time I saw him with Soundgarden was in 96, right before they broke up. He did not want to be there. You could tell. He sang, he played, but he was not happy. I saw him with Audioslave. He was happy.
Mm-hmm.
I saw him solo. He was really happy.
I saw him live twice solo.
Okay.
First time was right after Audioslave broke up.
What was that like?
That was sick.
He was great.
It was at not the Electric Factory. I think it was the TLA.
Oh, it's fucking, that's so small.
And we were floor for it. We weren't close to the stage. We knew the back of the TLA, but... He was awesome. It was the full electric band.
Yeah, that's what I got to.
So
he I saw him on that Scream tour, but it was a full rock band, and they didn't really play when they did the Scream songs. They were rock band songs, so it was
that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was
and awesome. Then I got to see live acoustic at the Grand.
Now see, that's the shit. That's
that
the one.
Was I still? I found when we were moving from my old apartment to with my girlfriend.
Sure.
I found my ticket stub from that show.
Did you put it in a frame?
I'm going to.
You should.
I have it in a little lockbox. I save that. But,
to see Stone Gossard and Jeff Ament and him and fucking Matt Cameron.
And Creedy? Mike McCready?
Was it McCready?
Yeah, Mike McCready was...
It was everybody except Eddie, wasn't it?
Well, Eddie was on it briefly.
No, but not in the fucking band.
Yeah, it wasn't in the band at the time.
Yeah, so I saw them all. It was fucking great, man. They were so good. And there wasn't a light show. It wasn't fancy. They just fucking played, and Cornell was so good. And then he died a few months later. How happy am I got to go? Like, I almost didn't go. She was pissy at me. We were fighting. It was a whole fucking ordeal. I'm just glad I went. This is weird, and I'm going to say it out loud, but this fucking happened. There was another time in my life I wasn't supposed to go to a concert. I had always been a huge Faith No More fan. I don't know if you even know who that
is. Oh, yeah, I know Faith No More.
Huge
fan. Mike Patton.
Mike Patton. And they were coming through town, and they were playing Album of the Year tour. It was more or less the end of Faith No More. We didn't know they were going to break up, but we knew it was like winding down. Opening bands, Limp Bizkit, who are unknown.
Wow.
No, dude, they were fucking great. They were great. They got booed off the stage, but they were great. And then a year and a half later, they sold out the same venue as
Limp
Bizkit.
That's funny.
But like, Philly hated them. And I was with my friend Johnny Mack. He was like, fuck you, Limp Bizkit, you suck. And I was like, dude, that guy's a star. So I went to see something magical. I got to see Limp Bizkit starting and Faith No More ending. And then many years later, I got to go see Temple the Dog. And both times, the woman I was with didn't want me to go to the concert. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, this fucking thread through my life. So the answer, my friends, is always go to the concert.
Yeah, and especially because you never know.
You never know.
With Cornell dying, we mentioned that before.
Did you even see that coming ever in any capacity?
That shocked me. I was a rough day. My grandmother died the night before.
Yeah,
in her sleep.
You told me.
And so my dad calls me. I just woke up. I didn't even check the news at all. And basically, right when I was getting up, he said, you know, she passed in her sleep last night. So I was already a wreck.
So fucking sad.
And then he went, by the way, I want you to know you're about to have a really sad day. So before you get shocked.
Or read it, yeah.
Yeah, Chris Cornell died last night. I was like, what?
And they had just played a show with Soundgarden.
They did, and I did not see that coming.
To this day, I don't think anybody from Soundgarden has really commented on the whole fucking ordeal or situation.
I think Matt Cameron's briefly made a statement. They accepted an award, I think.
I heard about the award.
I don't know if they said anything or Vicky said, did all the talking, I think. But
I still follow the Chris Cornell page on Instagram and everything and on Facebook, so it's interesting.
So sad. He was so talented.
Very prolific. They think it was the medication. Like, he was on the antidepressants, mm-hmm. and he fucked them up and blah, blah, blah. I don't know, man. It's a weird thing.
That was
insane. Anyway, we're celebrating the man's life and the music. We're not trying to bum us everybody out.
Not at all.
But you got the whole grunge thing. Now, do you consider Stone Temple Pilots and Scott Weiland a part of the grunge movement, or is it because they're not from there, not really?
I would argue that I think they are part of the movement, but in a different capacity.
Because
when I think grunge, I think Seattle. I think all those bands come from
there. Why Seattle, though? It's a sound. It isn't a fucking location.
Well, it's where all
those... Because Hole is also from there. That's not really grungy.
Not really, but it's where all those groups kind of originated from, though. Because it was...
Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
Northwest. But then so is Duff McKagan. He was first.
Yes, he was, but he made his start. He played in Seattle bands.
Yeah, in the
and then he went to... L.A.
Yeah, of course. He left and they formed GR.
But he, so I think he left right way before that.
Oh, before it kicked off. But that whole punk movement that gave birth to it, he is part of it. Like, they're all the same age, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, he's not much older than Kurt Cobain or would have been. Or
he, but all, it was so interesting, that entire scene, because it was so isolated from everything.
And who saw that it would be such a huge thing? I don't know if you remember this because you were younger than me, but like Macy's had like a grunge line and like all the upper fucking clothes. Yeah, you had could like those fucking and it's weird because the flannel shirts are back.
Yeah,
right.
I've noticed
and
that.
I look around, I'm like, well, that's interesting.
The '90s are back.
Well, oh, Doc Martens are back.
Yeah.
And then I had asked this. We had the band Pagan on here. That's my manager, Starscream's manager's band, and he's got a young guitar player in the band. So I was like, you know what Doc Martens are? He's like, no. I'm like, what? Like, how do you not fucking know what Doc Martens are, motherfucker? You know what I mean? But whatever.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, kids, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
But it is what it is, as they say. I don't know, man. It's rock and roll. Scott Weiland, I'm a little upset with for passing away on. It's a good friend of mine, Ryan Vox, who is now a pro wrestler, actually.
Wow.
But he used to be a musician. He got, like, online, and he was, like, mad at Scott Weiland for dying on us. Like, he wrote a whole fucking diatribe.
Really?
I was, like, over Scott. I bought that book. I remember I was on a plane flying back from somewhere, and I'm reading the fucking book, and I'm like, fuck this guy. Fuck Scott Weiland. Like, I loved him so much, and he was just a junkie, which makes me sad now that he's gone. You know what I mean? Weiland, fucking Lemmy from Motorhead, David Bowie. Like, there was just a string of massive losses in rock and roll. Now, what I found interesting, I don't know if you knew this, but like Weiland was a huge Bowie fan.
I did. You could tell that I've just even seen him perform.
Because he plotted a lot of his solo career to be like David Bowie.
Yeah.
Like, The Man That Fell to Earth was Bowie's movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the video that he made for that solo record we were talking about, 12 Bar Blues, he's like mimicking that movie in the video. So he was a huge... He dies before Bowie. So I'm hoping when Bowie shows up, Wilds are like, hey, I got a cigarette for you. Come on, let's go in, man. It's a little weird.
Yeah.
I hope. I don't fucking know. I don't know, man. Maybe. Rock and roll, as they say.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to discuss today, sir? You're like,
not that I could think of.
All right, so listen. We've done 4-hour episodes. Mm-hmm. This is episode number 22. the Vex on Vex podcast. Vincent and myself have spent a lot of time together. We're hoping you're going to appear some more shows in the future.
I think so.
That'd be cool. This is our second run together. Yes, we had done like multiple shows before. Ironically enough, as this is being recorded, the episode currently airing on the Podbean Network is your first episode with us.
Yes.
And you did more than one last time, too.
I did too.
So next week, which would be featured on Tuesday, because the holiday they don't post anything, you're going to be on the next episode as well. So put that on Facebook and let your friends know.
Can't wait.
All that good stuff. So my name is VexX. This is the Vex on Vex podcast. We are supported by the Podbean application on your phone, supported by the Loud and Loaded Network. I'm a part of a band called Starscream. Go check it out. Please check out the Vex on Vex Facebook page. And Vincent, what do you got to say?
This is please check out my band Ascension Drive on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Bandcamp, iTunes, Spotify, and also look at my channel on YouTube. And also, please remember to stay frosty.